You're listening to the Food Talk Show, and it's me, Sue Nelson, the presenter, all on my own in the studio because it's our second special of Food Matters Live. And for anybody who hasn't been, you really need to go next year if you missed it this year. It's in November and it's normally at Excel in London. Some 400 odd speakers at various seminars and events across the 3 days. People from Justin King, who runs Sainsbury's, to Heston Blumenthal, really making a passionate plea in terms of what we should be teaching our children at school as far as food and cooking is concerned. I had some great interviews while I was there, of course, goes without saying, and you're just about to listen to those. Bingham Jones, very interesting, Motion Nutrition, the lovely Sally Newell of Simply Ice Cream. I tasted the most gorgeous ice cream that she'd made for Christmas. Absolutely delicious. I had a beer with Skinny Brands, so I had a beer without the conscience because it's slightly lower on calories, and of course I ate some insects. Let's see what they've all got to say. Guy, I'm just about to find out all about Bingham Jones innovations in food. If we're looking around here, there's some incredible innovations at Food Matters Live. But some people really understand how to do all that, and they've got a really clear picture and a vision and know where to source suppliers and test kitchens and all that. And other people really don't know. They've just got a great idea, but they don't know where to go.
Yeah, and that can be tough. And it's great that there are people out there like Bingham and Jones who are helping in that area and helping solve that problem. Someone's got a great idea, but they're not entirely sure, you know, how to, you know, combine all the bits and pieces together. They're here to help, which is exactly what we need. We need more innovation to come to light and to come to market, so that we can all start enjoying their fantastic products.
And what I would like to see is I'd like to see more investment from investors actually going in to, you know, people like Bingham and Jones, where they're then helping those people get to market in a very professional way, as opposed to just shoving loads of money into, as you know, to the sort of stakeholder, you know, shareholder thing, and it may fail because they haven't got the right help that they need.
Yeah, it's a very challenging industry. I mean, obviously, we speak to a whole load of different people at all ends of, from each end of the spectrum, you know, the really big guys and the really small guys as well. And the funny thing is that they're all doing something really interesting. And, you know, they all need a bit of help. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today.
So I'm joined by Johnny Bingham, and obviously your partner David Jones is busy on the stand fielding all the clients, and you're just sitting here on a chair enjoying yourself. But Johnny, there is a real need, isn't there, for somebody, if they don't know, they've got past the kitchen table stage, they've got lots and lots of interest, to really go and get professional help, because that sometimes can make the difference. You know, you can get the taste right, but it then becomes a business.
I think that's exactly right, and it only just begins at the kitchen. For us, we work with small brands and large brands and retailers and all sorts of people. But what we find is that more and more they haven't got any kind of clear focus or route in their mind of what it actually looks like to get a product to market. So they've got a great idea. It's generally built on some passion that they have, and a lot of those passions can be completely misled, where you know they really are bad ideas that you just can't sort of, you know, you can't go with that, the genesis of their idea. Yeah, but
we see quite a lot of people on this show who have started to get the packaging right. They've started to, you know, go into, they've probably got an external kitchen that they're using, or they've got some, you know, contract manufacturer, but very, very small levels. They've probably got into Ocado, and then they can't understand why they don't get any further. The fact that there's like 500 million, you know, products on Ocado, and it's a bit like getting an app on the App Store, you know, well, what does that mean after that? So they've sort of got to that stage, and then that's the bit where I worry that it deserves to get further, but then it doesn't.
Yeah, and you know, there aren't many people out there who can actually assist in that process either, because it then, you know, you're not just, especially with, you know, someone like Ocado, is you're not just looking at, oh great, you know, we're listed. Now we've got a rate card of how we promote, that we weren't really aware that we had all this money else to spend, which can, you know, severely damages your margin. Another thing with Ocado is that obviously you know if you're only they don't take pallets really, so you know it's a consolidated delivery that's into those, and that all hits their margin, you know, at every point. So unless they're really set up and sort of professionally kind of together, they just fall by the wayside, and we've seen it more and more.
So explain exactly how you would help somebody. So I know you help very, very, very big multinational companies and smaller businesses. So say a small business, I've got a good, you know, few tens of thousands of pounds that I've saved up and I'm going to go for it. How would you be able to help me?
Okay, so I mean, I can probably talk about something that we're involved in at the moment. I'm not going to mention any names because whatever. But they have come to us and said, look, we have an idea for a specific part in the market. This is driven by you know, a personal kind of journey, and you know, my grandmother.
Story as usual behind it, as there needs to be, yeah.
But a great story, and actually a compelling story.
Absolutely.
And that then actually frames what, you know, the route that you take. So then we will then sort of disseminate that, look at, right, let's get this into a concise range of products that you know, underpin that story really, and from there, obviously, with this particular one, it's all about it being nutritional. It's about it being meal replacements for very ill people. It's about you know, people not losing weight when you know, generally weight is dropping off.
So you will really help that company and say, not only will we sit with you and strategically work out what that product range should be, it'll be what it looks like, what it contains. We'll help you actually construct all of that stuff, including the branding.
That's exactly right. So we will do the entire sort of the innovation on the product itself, so that the product is ready to take to a manufacturer. We will then find a co-manufacturer. And in this particular case, we've had to go to Spain for a manufacturer because there isn't one in the UK.
And I presume your client would never have even known how to do that?
Never. We help with packaging, we help with the SRP of you know, the shelf ready packaging for that. We will help with the nutritional, with the branding, so
shelf life and everything.
Yeah, everything, and to market, and then you see we tend to keep all of our clients as well. So you know, whether it's the large ones or the small ones, you know, they'll drift in, they'll drift out, but they'll always come back because we always try and do a great service, and that's kind of what we're here for really.
And with all the smaller sort of clients that you see, what's the most common mistake that you know, makes people fail? Go on, you can tell us.
Yeah, I mean, that's really difficult. And actually, I don't think that it is anything specifically, and I don't think that it is, you know, any kind of one, you know, sort of mal-informed idea. I think that really what it is you know, a bunch of things like... they are absolutely attached to a name of a product, which is just absolutely ditched from the outset, or that their story they believe is so compelling but actually wouldn't light anybody's candle apart from them. So it's making sure that their journey is as coherent for the shopper as possible.
One question that sprung to mind when you were chatting just then was... I think you were saying earlier that you also develop your own products. So you're taking all this experience that you've had working with other clients. Have you had some roaring successes or any tragic failures with your own?
You can't have failures. He advises everybody else. He said no failures.
But you can learn from failures. So yeah. That's a good thing.
He's not allowed to.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to learn from failures. We're not going to mention any failures. Actually, there aren't any failures thus far, but that's not to say that there won't be. You know, like I say, I've had D-lists. of products that I've launched. But we are involved in a company here called the Wow Cake Company, which is, they're a small gluten-free brand. Since we've got involved, we've changed the way they look. We've changed, to be honest, we haven't developed those products at all. Sue Craddock, she is a celiac, and she developed all of those products, and they're brilliant. All underpinned by a great flour blend, and that's fantastic.
But you'd say that to her. You would say, look, we've tasted these, or we know what the market likes. Don't touch that. That's fine, but we need to sort this, and this out.
That's exactly right. So, you know, we approached the packaging, we approached the look of it, we approached, you know, the social media side of things, and then actually we used our network to then take it into the retailer at the point in which we knew it was about right. And we're just starting to get listings, which is great.
Excellent. So how do you charge somebody? So if somebody's listening and they get what you're saying, you know, they're not prima donna, they know that they've got to take some criticism, they know that they've got to get real about it and professional, how do they approach you and how do you charge them?
Really good question. That kind of depends on what they are and, what, you know, what they've got, essentially, you know.
And where they are on the journey.
Exactly that. You know, for retailers or for suppliers into retailers, then we work on a day rate with those. And that is, you know, that's an ongoing thing. And maybe as a retainer over a year or over 6 months. But then for a smaller a person who wants to launch a new brand, then again, we would work on a day rate, but we have a team. So there's myself, David, and we've got Aaron Givon, who is our new development chef we brought in. We've got a food scientist. We're associated to University of Nottingham as well. So we've got, you know, good links for development. So what we try to do is work smart and work fast so that we're not wasting anybody's money.
So essentially you'd work on a project basis with them, work out how many days it would be, you know, what exactly they want to do and sort of quote them on you know, how that would how it happened and how we go forward.
Absolutely. And you see, for us, the first bit is just the first bit. You know, we want to be sort of invested in that project sort of going forward. So, you know, we always make sure that we offer really good value for money.
Yeah, because people are innovating all the time and you want to be there all the time. Absolutely. Just before we end, any particular sort of innovation trends you're seeing at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, we write quite a few trend insights for, you know, a few publications, you know, well-known publications. And I think for us at the moment, it's that, you know, there's a bunch of things, but it's fermentation, and fermentation really is massive and it's going nowhere. Nowhere down, it's going up.
Going nowhere, I didn't mean that. I mean, it's only going one way and it's going up is what you meant.
That's exactly what I meant, yeah. Pickling, again, you know, at the moment when, you know, when you think of pickles and things like that, everything is, you know, that real kind of makes you wince and, you know.
Pickled egg down the pub.
Exactly that. But if you have pickles in a restaurant, they are, you know, they're a different level delicious. And I think that there are a few people now starting to play in that arena, and that I think will be a big thing.
That's your top tip. You've got any top tips? You've got your finger on the pulse.
Oh, I like to think so, but then I come to places like Food Matters Live and I realise that there's just a whole other world out there. Some of the things that we were talking about earlier, turmeric, still pretty hot. Kombucha, I guess that's in the fermentation category. And, I mean, everything around here seems to be free from something or other. Really interesting that, you know, for a long time we were adding stuff to food and now we just keep taking stuff away.
Good.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm sure that will be set to continue. I mean, obviously that's a massively wide trend, but...
I mean, my tip, I think, is personalisation of food, and I think that everybody's realising that you can't just have one homogenous health, you know, sort of message for the whole of the population because we're all different. And I think there'll be lots more of your ability to be able to work out what is good for your body and what isn't, as opposed to what's good for the UK generally, and then be able to tailor and understand, you know, what you need personally at your life stage or your physical makeup, and be able to make those choices. So I think there'll be a lot more analytical stuff where you will be able to see that for yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I think personalization is a big buzzword across many industries, you know, in marketing, in technology, and I guess it's through technology that a lot of this personalization is now possible. And so I think that we're going to see a lot more of that in the future, which is great, because it's talking more to the customers and serving them better, and that's what we should all be doing.
So, Johnny Bingham, sorry, David Jones isn't here, but Johnny Bingham of Bingham & Jones Innovations in Food. How do people get in touch with you if they would like your help?
Well, we've got a website, which is www.binghamandjones.co.uk, or just a telephone call on 077.
Google it.
Google it.
That's what we do. That's what you do. Johnny Bingham, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Guy Routledge, Food Rush. Hello. I'm getting feeling a bit hot actually. We're in Food Matters Live, which is a great show to go to. Very different, very different from speciality. Lots of interesting things to learn. Very, very sort of mixed bunch of people here. Universities, research people, all sorts of things going on.
Yeah, all sorts of things, lots of free from stuff. We've even been chatting to some free from folks. Lots of really interesting, innovative things, innovative ingredients, and we're just sitting across from. I think they call it the sports nutrition section, and there's a whole bunch of people there who look, a lot more fit and healthy than we.
Scarily healthy,
And
that sort of glowing skin and all that rippling muscle.
I think it's just because it is warm in here. They're all just a bit sweaty.
So you and I obviously spend our time eating and drinking a lot. That's our job.
Too much.
Somebody's got to do it. To offset that, I do go to the gym. And I know you have a personal trainer because you're posh.
It's because I know that if I had a gym membership, I wouldn't go. I've got a guy who comes to the house a couple of times a week. And it's slow going, and it never seems to get any easier, but it's really important to look after yourself, especially when you work long hours and you sit in front of a computer all day. That's really important, but sometimes you just want a little bit of a supplemental boost or something to help push you in the right direction. And I think we have someone who might be able to help us out.
I mean, I think people are talking about health and fitness and diabetes and diet and all that sort of stuff. For me, there actually is one magic bullet, and that is getting some exercise, actually. You can cut whatever you want out of your diet and all that sort of stuff, but really do try and get some exercise. Try and get out, try and do some walking, it doesn't matter what it is, but I do think that is the magic bullet, particularly when you're starting to get older.
Yes, and unfortunately, fortunately, maybe I should say, I'm not getting older yet, but I can definitely feel that I need to do more, stretch the legs, get out and about more.
So I've hit my midlife crisis, and I've got Joe Wellstead here, Motion Nutrition. So having hit my midlife crisis, I decided I'd better do something with myself. So I've been really trying hard for the last 18 months, but I don't know what I'm doing, Joe, actually. So I go to the gym in the morning, first thing, before I go to work, normally about four times a week. I don't eat anything before I go. And then when I get back, I'm absolutely starving. So I normally have egg and soldiers or baked beans on toast or peanut butter on toast or something like that. And then I go to work and just carry on my normal day. Now, you've got all these amazing sort of nutritional stuff. Is that the right thing to do? Or should I be doing a little something, not just having a cup of Thai food before I go to the gym when I haven't eaten, for hours on end? What is the right thing to do before you go to the gym?
Well, the first thing I'd say is well done for going four times a week, because that's a lot more than most people do. I think the right thing to do is to find the right habits and routines that work for you. So if you can get up and exercise without having any breakfast, that works for you, then that's great. For me personally, if I did that, I'd probably faint on my way to the gym. I wouldn't even get there. I wouldn't even get there and be able to, let alone be able to exercise. So
the reason why I do that, Joe, is if I went downstairs and made myself some breakfast, I'd open the paper, I'd have a little look at BBC News, I wouldn't go. So what I do is I literally put my gym stuff next to the bed, so I have to tread on it to go to the toilet, first thing in the morning, which makes me put it out, because otherwise, if I distract myself, I know. So that just works for me. But I don't feel lightheaded when I go to the gym either. So maybe that suits my body, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's setting those routines. So, I was actually an ex-professional swimmer, and I trained 25 hours a week, and with swimming, you get some really early morning sessions. So I had to set those routines in stone. You know, I had my alarm, and I would actually get up out of bed before my alarm had actually finished ringing. You know, I'd get up and then start moving, because that's the only way you can actually do it. Otherwise, you sort of go hit the snooze button. So setting those routines is really important. For me, I need a little something before I can actually get moving. And the first thing to do is really to set your to get your meals right, and to hit that nice schedule of regular healthy meals, you know, three times a day or whatever works. And once you've got that sorted out, you can start considering supplementation. And you know, ideally, you choose things that are going to be beneficial to your overall health as well as your performance.
So what you're saying here with these supplements is that they're not meal replacements. You should eat healthily during the day, you should exercise. But actually, this then helps on top of that, if particularly if you're using quite a lot of energy, you know, for exercise or whatever.
Exactly. So we're very strong. We have a very strong stance on encouraging people to have regular meals and eat real fresh food. And then on top of that, the supplements can be great to give you a little functional boost. So for instance, our organic pre-workout energizer that you've got there is great to give you a nice lift. It wakes you up in the morning, helps you with your mood, so you get to the gym and you're actually happy to be there. You don't feel like...
Well, that's an unknown. I've never known that ever. I just look at all the other people that are there, and, you know, everybody's the same. It's like, oh, I can't believe I'm here.
Exactly. So, you know, when Guy meets up with his personal trainer in the morning, he'll actually, you know, actually be happy to see him, whatever the time.
Never.
So it's about what the product can deliver, and, you know, as a functional product and as a convenience. So
if that lifts your mood, does it actually do anything for you? You know, I've got my routine at the gym. I don't know if it's any good, but it works for me, or maybe it doesn't. But you know, would that help me row further or lift heavier, or as well as boosting my mood?
Definitely. So we use some proven functional ingredients, such as beetroot, for instance. There's lots of research behind beetroot to help with blood flow and help with physical performance and actually recovery after your workout as well. But also what it says, you know, if you're going to the gym four times 1 hour a week, you don't want to spend your first half an hour feeling like you need to wake up and actually get going.
I thought that was normal, though, because, like, you know, people smile in the gym. I don't smile at anybody. No way. I just don't look at anybody. If I do, I slightly growl at them. I just thought everybody did that.
I'm sorry, I was saying, I think that's all day for you, isn't it? You just kind of
very
scowling.
Funny, very funny. Okay, so yes, carry on.
Well, you know, if you have a limited amount of time, it's actually pretty good to be able to get there and feel like you can get the most out of that limited amount of time, especially if you're paying for a personal trainer and you really want to get the most out of that. So now this is where a functional product like a pre-workout energizer can really help you.
There's no way I'd have a personal trainer, because also, first of all, we'd have to speak to them, and I don't speak to anybody in the morning. No way.
It can be tough, but some people need it, you know. It's not always easy to, and you know, that's why I was saying well done to you for actually doing it four times a week, because it's pretty tough.
Got to do something. So we've got the vegan protein, which one? Pre-workout energizer. So what you're saying is I should try this and just see if it makes any difference. I might even make friends when I'm in the gym if I have some of this, let alone I might actually, you know, be able to perform better, and it'll make the blood flow better as well, which presumably helps your skin and all that sort of stuff. It's got, what has it got in it, Joe?
Well, it's funny you mentioned help your skin, because that's every product that we make is exactly the purpose. We want it to help with your physical and mental performance, but also your overall health. So we've actually had some customers use this for a couple of months and then come back to us and say that their skin has all cleared up, which is amazing.
Does it remove wrinkles?
Well, look.
No, okay.
there's certain things that we just can't say, but maybe it would. So we're using ingredients like beetroot, which helps blood flow, and then there's maca, matcha, guarana, panax ginseng. These are all really powerful natural energizers that give you a super strong boost, energy boost, but also are really beneficial to overall health and long-term health.
That tastes absolutely fine. It doesn't taste medicinal or horrible or have an aftertaste, does it?
No, it's a really nice surprise, because I've tried a couple of supplements in the past, these kind of, you know, these BCAAs or, you know, some of these other kind of amino acids and stuff, and they taste really chemically and horrible, and I have no idea if they're doing any good or not, but this tastes natural. I mean, it tastes like beetroot juice. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it tastes absolutely fine. And then you've got this other one here, which is vegan protein motion nutrition. I know it's based mostly on peanuts. What's this one for, Joe?
So this is actually a product that we launched earlier this year, and it's our first fully vegan protein powder. So the pre-workout was vegan as well, but this is a full vegan protein powder. And we use fat-reduced peanut flour to give it a nice flavor and a nice texture. And that's actually very high in protein too, but we also add some raw pumpkin seed protein, hemp seed, and yellow pea protein. So it makes it a really nice complete amino acid profile. Because the thing about the plant-based proteins is that you need to use two or three different sources to make sure you're getting the full amino acid spectrum.
I really like that. I'd have that as a drink just, you know, going out in the evening.
Yeah, that's really, really nice. I mean, I know we both like peanut butter, and it tastes like, yeah, it's like a drinking peanut butter. And so how much of this would I have? Is it, we've just had a little tasting shot here, but is it something you'd have like 300 mils, 500 mils, a litre? How does it work?
I couldn't have a litre of that.
No, a litre is a bit much, but basically the recommended serving size in there, you have a scoop in there, and that gives you 25 grams, which gives you 17 grams of protein. And you could have this either as a shake like this straight after your workout, or you might want to, say if you go home and actually have your breakfast after your workout immediately, you can add it into your porridge, you can add it into a smoothie. And the peanut flour is actually really light and fluffy, so it works really well in things like pancakes. I've even tried making cookies with it. It's a really easy way to add a bit of protein into your diet. So it's not about having the huge bodybuilding protein shake three times a day. That's definitely not what we do.
So when I do go to the gym, there's all these like big sort of pots of whatever it is, I don't know, some type of supplement, and I don't, it worries me because it feels like they're bodybuilding things which I'm not sure are very good for you. What are those things that I keep seeing at gyms and in health food stores? Because they just look, I worry that they look unnatural and that somehow they're steroids or something.
Well, I'm not sure what steroids, but they are usually pretty unhealthy. You know, there's a lot of things like artificial sweeteners, flavorings, maltodextrin as the carb base, which is just super refined cornstarch. So actually, that is exactly the reason why we created this brand and why we created these products, to offer functional sports supplements that were actually beneficial to your health, as opposed to those big tubs with very macho packaging and all kinds of disgusting ingredients in there.
And so if somebody is, you know, taking those, I mean, why are they doing that? Is it because they do think they're getting protein or more energy, or they recover quicker? Or what's the selling point of those types of products?
Yeah, I mean, usually people want to get loads of protein because there's a lot of marketing around protein, and that, you know, sports supplements come from the bodybuilding world where protein is essential, and people want to hit like crazy numbers, like 200 grams of protein in a day. So that tends to be the dominant factor. And then
why do they do that? Is it because it builds muscle?
Yeah, I mean, having protein immediately after your workout is going to help with your muscle recovery, and this is proven. So if you're enhancing your muscle recovery, you're going to grow more muscles, more muscle mass. Also, if you have a source of protein just before bed, your muscle protein synthesis is actually going to be improved overnight. So without even doing any more exercise, your muscles are going to recover.
And that's what people are buying into, and there is some science behind that. But what people are doing artificially creating that and probably making it cheap and taste okay. So these are a sort of natural alternative to that, and they taste natural, don't they? I think, Guy, it doesn't taste anything.
No, they really do. They take. I mean, it says on the front of the pack as well, organic. And yeah, it just tastes like there's no kind of nasty chemically stuff in there. I mean, there's all the bits and pieces that you need, obviously, but it is all coming from natural sources.
Yeah, 100%. So all of our powder products are certified organic. So that means that even if we wanted to add something like a sweetener or an artificial flavoring, we wouldn't actually be allowed under the organic certification. Even something like stevia, which most people consider a natural sweetener, in the EU is not authorized as an organic product. And I think that that's not ready to change because it's a highly, highly processed ingredient. So all of those ingredients that you see in the conventional products, we don't like them, we don't think they're healthy, but even if we did, and even if we wanted to use them, our organic certification means that we cannot.
Well, I think you're doing really well there, and I'm tempted.
Yeah.
Tempted. I might replay. Thing is, I like quite like being grumpy, but
very good at it.
I try very hard. Thank you for that. So it's Joe Wellsted Motion Nutrition. Joe, where do people find these products? I presume they can buy them online.
Yeah, of course, you can go to motionnutrition.com. If you're in London, you can head down to your local Planet Organic, Whole Foods, or As Nature Intended. And, you know, this is just the beginning for us. We're reaching 2 years old now, so hopefully you're going to see us in a lot more stores across the country.
Well, good for you. And I think it's a really good move, because some of those other products, I think they're just quite worrying, really. So good luck with it, Joe Wellstead. And that's Motion Nutrition. Thanks for joining us. So it's day two at Food Matters Live. I'm joined by Christy, our producer. Christy, your headphones aren't plugged in, so you can't hear. Just thought I'd let you know that. Now, I've got my favourite ice cream, and this is absolutely true, it is my favourite ice cream, called Simply Ice Cream, in front of me. Now, Simply Ice Cream is made not far from our office. Have you ever tasted it?
Do you know what? I don't think I have.
And you're in for a treat.
I'm a massive ice cream fan, so... Okay.
So, Simply Ice Cream has entered the Good Taste Awards many, many times. They've actually got a 3-star, I believe, for their coffee ice cream. So 3-star is about as good as you can get. So it just shows the sort of level of what they do. And I know they've got stars for all sorts of other ice creams. And I'm joined by Sally, who owns the company, who started the company. Sally, why is Simply Ice Cream so lovely?
Well, we manufacture by hand, so it's very different to most ice cream on the market. We also use double cream, milk and sugar, and then whatever we're putting into it is very natural. So it's fresh fruit, the Christmas pudding, we have rum-soaked raisins in there, and then Christmas pudding. So it's food you would recognise. There's nothing chemical, manufactured, powdered, syrups.
So it's how your grandma might make ice cream. I'm just to let everybody know, we're tasting the Christmas pudding, Simply Ice Cream, at the moment. We're just going around here. We've talked to all sorts of exhibitors, you know, and they're trying to replace sugar, and they're trying to do health food, you know, and say turmeric's best for you, and da da da. This is a luxury product, and it's a treat, and it should be treated as such. And if you are going to have a treat, it should be made with the proper stuff, really, shouldn't it?
I think so. Yes. You know, there is a debate at the moment about sugar in food, but actually the substitutes aren't necessarily any better for you. In fact, some of them are worse. So stevia, for instance, which is as good as sugar, has to be masked because it has a very bitter taste. So you're then putting something else into your food that isn't necessarily as natural as it should be. So I think, you know, whilst there is a massive debate on sort of the health issues surrounding the nation, I think, you know, if you're eating honest, proper food, you don't have to eat ice cream every day, 5 times a day. So it is a treat, and I think if you're going to have a treat, it should be, you know, sort of proper food, indulgent food.
She's got a really big smile on her face, not as big as my smile though, because actually I'm trying to stop talking so that I can eat more of this ice cream. What's your thoughts? You're an ice cream fan.
Yeah, I love it. I'd rather have that than an actual Christmas pudding on Christmas Day. It tastes just like a big old lump of double cream and Christmas pudding, and you mix it all together and just cold, and it just tastes amazing. I love it.
Yeah, and I think there is a really important point though, is that you know, people do need to eat healthily, but actually, and I try and eat healthily, especially if I'm getting older, try to exercise, do all the right things. But, you know, there is a place for a treat. And actually, as a human being, you do need it. So if you are going to do it, you know, I'd rather do that in my diet than eat quasi-health food all the way through the day. I'd rather try and eat really well and then treat myself than try and use all these substitutes.
Yes, no, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, there are some amazing producers here who are doing, you know, very good, healthy options. But I think it's when you start sort of putting all this sort of, you know, the additives, preservatives, stabilisers, the powders, the potions, you know, why are we mucking up that food chain? You know, there is a reason that things are grown in nature, because our bodies can assimilate that. So I think, you know, with an ice cream, if you are using double cream, milk, sugar and fresh strawberries, it's a very natural product. Your body can deal with it. We were here last year, actually, opposite Greenwich University, who'd just done a study on fat and sugar in people's diets. And actually, for the over 60s, it's a necessity. So,
thank God for that. I'm nearly there. I've got 4 more years to go. Phew! Thank goodness for that. I can hit the sugar and fat in 4 years' time.
But yeah, I mean, it was an interesting conversation, because I was sort of, you know, when I came to the show, I was thinking, I don't know that this is the right show for us. You know, there's an awful lot of nutritionists and food technologists. who I know were sort of going around and questioning sugar content and things. But what they were saying to us was that the double cream and the sugar together actually counterbalances each other. And
so I bet they were all standing around your stand as well, weren't they? Going, oh, we're fed up with all these, you know, these supplements over here. I know, let's go around Sally's Simply Ice Cream stand and stay here for a few minutes.
Hopefully. Yes, all welcome.
Now, the other thing with ice cream, again, we talked to a lot of producers who are in ambient and all sorts of other things, and distribution's, you know, a real difficulty and something that you have to crack if you're a producer. Being in the frozen food sector, you've got to be mad, really, haven't you, to have an ice cream brand? But it does bring its own problems.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, if I had my time again, I would never do frozen. I think when we first set up, we had our own van, and actually over the years, we have built our own distribution around the southeast. So that's how we deal with the sort of closer to home aspect of it. Going into export and further afield in the UK markets, you know, you do have to find the right distributor. If you're landing product in Singapore in 42 degrees, you know, you have an issue if you're dealing with a dodgy distributor.
I think the other thing with your product is because it's all natural, you know, you're using the proper stuff, for want of a better word. You know, you don't have those ice crystals that form because you're not using some of those, you know, other types of ingredients. And I presume that yours manages to be more stable, actually.
It does. I think with double cream, what happens is it doesn't form ice crystals because there's not enough water content in it, but it does potentially go a bit floury if it's defrosted and refrozen. So if someone has gone to Waitrose and bought a pot and sat it in the car for a couple of hours, you know, we do get the odd complaint that it tastes a bit strange.
Well, that's because it's been in your car for 2 hours. Of course it does. That's not your fault. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And this is, you know, but people, frozen is an area that people don't actually really understand, you know, sort of, and a lot of people, you know, there is a sign on the pot saying do not refreeze after it's frozen. But, you know, people will just bang it in the freezer. That, you know, it's what we do as humans. You know, it's fine.
So you're not tempted to go into the vegan ice cream area, or we come across quite a lot of alcoholic ice creams. You're not tempted by that? You're just going to stick to being simply ice cream?
We do a range of sorbets which are vegan, and we are vegetarian approved for the ice cream as well. So the alcoholic thing, I think there are lots of trends coming in and out. The Christmas pudding ice cream actually does have quite a lot of alcohol in it.
I did actually note that, did you?
You clocked that one, did you? We also do a rum and raisin, an Irish coffee, and a cherry and cherry brandy when the Kentish cherries are in season. So we have a sort of little bit of a dabble in it. It's not something that I would go into as an entire sort of range.
As a selling point.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I would recommend Simply Ice Cream. You can go on their website, which is simplyicecream.co.uk. And where else are you for sale?
We sell into Waitrose in the South East, Co-op and Morrison's, Co-op Southern, and then a lot of independent farm shops. And then food service is an area that we're actually building on at the moment. So it wasn't something that we actually actively went out to seek, but they're sort of coming to us because chefs are consumers. So.
Well, Sally Newell, Simply Ice Cream. Are you converted, by the way, Christy?
I'm going to have it instead of Christmas pudding.
You need to try the coffee one. That's really good. That's really good. Yeah.
The honeycomb is our bestseller. Mm. Honeycomb's also won 3 stars. So that's probably the most popular. Yes, yeah. It even outsells vanilla, which is unusual.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. And say, go onto the website or check us out on foodtalk.co.uk. Sally Newell, thank you very much. Hi, I'm with Tom Bell of Skinny Brands, and I'm really thirsty. So I've literally just necked some beer. Tastes all right.
And just to be clear, you've necked some beer because that's what Tom does. You've not just been having a sly drink.
Drink with Tom.
Just taking a break between things. We've got Tom Bell here from Skinny Brands, and he's brought with him some beer, so he's my new best friend.
Hi. He's my new best friend as well. Tom, why skinny? I'm not being rude here, but you sort of like a bit of a macho bloke, you know, a bit of stubble going on. You're like a bit of a lad. Skinny beer?
So Skinny is trying to address the issue that's in the industry. So it's a total lack of innovation from some of the biggest brands in the world. And what we do have, issues in the industry of is brand extensions. So everybody in the UK loves one of the major beers. So, and then they do a brand extension being a light version. So UK consumers, European consumers really don't react well to a brand extension in that way because they have adopted this this product which they've done as their original so well, and then they think, well, what have you taken out of the original to then give me this light version?
So as an example, then you might get Coors as a beer, and then you get Coors Light.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't buy Coors Light. Or what you're saying is I probably wouldn't, because I'm thinking, well, they've taken all the good stuff out then.
Exactly. So, I mean, the best one for the moment in the UK market is Budweiser. Everybody knows Budweiser, loves Budweiser, etc. They have it on draft. They have it in bottle formats pretty much across most major retailers. And they've launched Bud Light. Now, people are in the UK are considering, well, what is light about this product? So first and foremost in the UK, and actually most of the global industry, is these brand extensions have been a lower alcohol version, and light has generally meant low alcohol. But in the UK, people don't quite understand what light means. Is it flavour? Is it sugar, carbs, alcohol? Is it
So it's not explained, and what you're saying is people are therefore putting their own interpretation on what light means. I don't even think I know what light means, actually, now I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking it's probably less alcoholic.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the problem that Tom's just been talking about, which is that there doesn't seem to be a widely accepted definition. And so, yeah, I guess I would probably have thought of it as lower alcohol, but then the second one would be, well, is it lower calorie? And I have a feeling that yours is the second one. It's lower calorie, not lower alcohol.
Yeah, correct. So the point is with Skinny is everybody's quite familiar now with Skinny lattes and Skinny mochas. They've got Skinny popcorn out in the marketplace, the Skinny snacks and biscuits, everything. So it's widely recognised what Skinny means. And Skinny means either one of three things, either sugar, carbs or calories. And actually they both, all three of them interlink. So the point is for us is what we're trying to achieve here is have a full strength product, which people want. If you're having a beer, you want a beer. You don't want a non-alcoholic product.
See, when I was looking at you, I said that, didn't I? I said, you look like a guy. You look like a guy. And I couldn't actually see you, doing on the giving up on the strength. No. But your point is really important, isn't it? If I have a skinny latte, I expect it to have, as nice a taste as the normal latte. Yeah.
Exactly, and that's the point is what we've tried to do here, and bearing in mind we're not craft, we're not trying to be the best lager in the world, we've not got a heritage of being a British lager. We were made in Britain, we're made up at Cameron's Brewery in Hartlepool, but we're not basing ourselves on a British lager or being the best lager in the world. What we're trying to do is create a product that fits into everybody's lifestyle, whatever that lifestyle may be. So Skinny being Skinny, it's low calorie, it's low sugar, it's low carb, it's vegan friendly, gluten free and kosher. So the point is here is that you can drink it for any one of those reasons. If you are celiac, you can drink it for the fact it's gluten-free. If you just want a great-tasting lager, you drink it because it's a great-tasting lager. But actually, what we're trying to tap into is the UK consumers, and actually all the consumer market has options now for lower calorie or lower sugar or lower fats, whatever it might be. We're trying to address that in the right way in the alcohol industry and giving people a proper beer that they can enjoy, that tastes like a proper beer, but has all the added benefits that they want.
So tell me about your tactic, because this is a bit of a dilemma. Your tactic, I've got a beautiful bottle here, and it says Skinny Lager. Is that a good tactic, in terms of you need to market it, so you need to stand out, and people need to understand that they're buying something, which is everything a lager should be. It's just that it's not as calorific. However, don't look macho when I order that. If I'm sort of, there's 15 of us, and I've just played rugby.
Well, I actually came up with this concept 5 or 6 years ago, and I own an online retailer called Skinny Booze, which is where this whole idea started. So I was playing rugby for years. And
that was a good guess, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's the nose and the ears.
Exactly. Thanks for the compliment. So the point was, we train all week, we train hard, we play on a Saturday, and we go and get as drunk as possible. And you're back to square one again. You train all week, you play on Saturday, and you do it as a vicious circle.
Can I just say that obviously as a programme devoted to looking after yourself, we wouldn't advise everybody to do that.
Yeah, absolutely, drink in moderation, whatever it may be. But the point is, we were doing this vicious circle, and I managed to get hold of some lager, which was called Moosehead Light from Canada. It's a fantastic light lager. It has less carbs than standard lagers. And we brought it in from Canada, and we had all the rugby teams locally to me started taking it, and then we put it on a website, started doing very well. We started looking for different wines, and we were importing all these different products on their merits, not because of their marketing and telling us it was low calorie or gluten free or low sugar or whatever, on the merits of the product. So we tested hundreds of products, figured out which ones were good, and then sold those. And now what we've had to do is go away and think of a brand that is going to be the specialist in this area, because nobody else is doing it in the alcohol industry, and put a range and a brand in front of it for the consumers to adopt and understand that we're not trying to be something that we're not. We're not trying to be a craft brewery which is coming out with a concept. So Gary Conway, my other co-founder, and myself being Tom Bell, we're not Bell and Conway's Skinny Lager. We are Skinny Brands bringing out a lager, and Skinny Brands in the future bringing out a cider and then a range of wines. People need to see Skinny Brands as being the specialist. They go to us because we're the best in the business at doing it, and they're going to get a product which they can trust and believe in and get the benefits from.
I can see that from a marketing perspective, but my question was, so that brands you and people can find you, and that's a great marketing tactic in most things. However, if you're a macho brand, shoving Skinny on it, is that good? I don't know. I'm just asking as a dilemma. It's a difficult one for you because you've got to choose one of those paths, haven't you?
So all of our marketing campaign is very male orientated, because actually 80% of our buyers are male. So we've done a lager because, yes, we do need to be we do need to have a male orientation for the product. Naturally, Skinny is it gravitates to the feminine drinker. Now, what we need to do as a brand is be a bit more masculine. We actually have 80% of our drinkers for the lager specifically are male. It's the industry now is either if you're trying to drink because you're trying to lose a bit of weight, then Skinny is the option for you. If you're trying to drink because you're looking after yourself, and this is the 18 to 25 year old demographic, it costs no more than a standard lager, so they can afford it, but they're going to get the benefits out of it. And the people in the middle that are just looking for a great beer to drink, it fits into their lifestyle as well. So the point is, Skinny is all about not necessarily I'm looking after myself, but they can view it in whatever way that they want to, and it just fits in with whatever that they need it to be. It's suppose trying to avoid being overly masculine or overly feminine. We want to
and definitely not being preachy.
No, exactly. We don't want to be. They drink it for whatever reason that they want to, and we just want it to be a great lager people can trust and believe in, that it'll fit into whatever part of their lifestyle that they need it to. And we don't want to try and pigeonhole ourselves to any one of those, being masculine or feminine, because a woman in the industry will always pick up a man's drink, but a man will never pick up a woman's drink.
Slight generalisation there, but I know what you mean. So in essence, what you're saying in a marketing tactic is, this is who we are, buy into it or don't, but this is who we are. Just right for you. I'm being rude there.
No, it's funny that you say that. I know you're trying to dig into me again, as you do love to do.
Yeah, I know, but you're like me. I do like a drink, but you know, it does. It's like somebody called it liquid cake to me once, which is right, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I saw these guys when I was wandering around the show yesterday, and I said their booth was hugely, hugely busy, and I saw the name, and I saw the really lovely branding. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And there were two things that I thought it could have been. It could have been either a no alcohol beer, which is a very trending topic at the moment. You know, this mindful drinking. I need to be a lot more mindful of how much I'm drinking, I guess. Or that it was going to be some kind of low calorie thing. And I was thinking, if it's either of those two, that's quite interesting. I didn't really mind which one of the two it would have been, because I could quite happily have something which is low alcohol, that would probably be good for me, and I could have something which is lower calorie, that will almost certainly be good for me. So it's, you know, it's great to see that these things are coming to market now.
So very good luck with it, Tom. It's Skinny Lager. Where can people find your stuff?
So we're listed nationwide in Tesco's. We've got 1,500 stores across the UK, from the peaks of Scotland all the way down to the south of London. We're in 500 Asda stores around the UK. We launch in Morrison's next week. We're available in 3,500 pub venues across the UK.
Well, basically, you can get it anywhere, chaps. Everywhere. Anybody's listening, just pop into your local supermarket, look out for Skinny, and it's there. Oh, well done to you. And really interested to see how this goes, actually. So keeping a good eye on it. Thank you very much, Tom Bell.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Okay, guys, so you're taking the mickey out of me because I'm not pronouncing this very well. So I'm saying Guillermo Gori.
That sounds perfect to me. I don't think I need to try my version of it.
No. Have I got that right? I mean, it's the Italian version of William, isn't it?
But exactly. Yeah, you pronounced it perfectly.
I doubt that. Guillermo, you have brought us cricket here, which is all to do with crickets. So you look like a perfectly normal gentleman, a normal Italian gentleman. Crickets? How did you come across crickets, and how did you get involved in crickets?
So basically, our team has been always very, very focused on sustainable products. And a few years ago, we came across with this idea, and we spot this emerging trend about edible insects. Which is actually something that more than 2 billion people eat every day in their diets. So we had this idea of, you know, introducing these food products in our Western countries and fight this taboo that we have about regarding insects. So we decided to conceive and develop some products transforming crickets and some other products, so that would have been much easier for consumers to eat these insects. And so we started a couple of years ago validating, basically one year and a half ago, validating these ideas, doing some sampling events in Italy, basically with crackers, with pasta, with other sweet biscuits, these kind of things. And then we had a huge media feedback once we participated in a huge event in Italy called the Terra Madre, which is an event promoted by Slow Food. And and then of course there we had some attention by the media. Immediately after, we launched a crowdfunding campaign with a crowdfunding platform, Italian crowdfunding platform. We raised 10k, and thanks to this small capital that we got, we incorporated the company here in London.
And you started making stuff with crickets. Now, on the Food Rush, which you run, Guy, I know you've done some research and stuff on sort of insects and that type of thing, and meat replacement in particular.
Yeah, and so that is the big draw for this for insects. I mean, a lot of people might think, why on earth are so many people experimenting with insects? But it's the protein content, isn't it, that people are searching for. You know, people want to looking for more protein in their diet, but we're also looking for alternative sources of protein. We've written a lot about edible insects. We ran a couple of events. We did an insect tasting with Eat Grub, who we've had on the show before. It's definitely a popular trend. I've eaten the insects themselves. I've eaten lots of bars with insects in them. But this is the first time I'm seeing pasta and crackers, which we have in front of us. And in fact, the crackers smell fantastic. I can kind of the smell is wafting over to me. Maybe I should have had some lunch.
Go on then. So you eat one of Guillermo's crackers there, and essentially what you're doing is you're not trying to make a cricket something that you eat. What you're trying to do is you're trying to up the protein content of you know normal food products and trying to start using crickets and cricket powders to manufacture foodstuffs with.
Exactly. Our products have 15% of cricket flour and with a 22% in protein, so they are actually very high in protein. As well as very sustainable, so they are very sustainable proteins.
So if you were making yourself a pasta dish, and you know you were using a sort of non-meat sauce, non-fish sauce, you know that you'd be getting quite a big whack of protein just through the pasta alone.
Exactly, that's the point. So basically, our target are consumers very concerned about our environment, foodies. As well as people, sport people, so people that.
So you've had a little taste.
I have. They taste very good. And I reached over to grab the packet because there was. It's very kind of interesting, complex flavour. So it's quite. I guess I got nuttiness, and I know that the crickets themselves or the insects, all sorts of different ones, have that kind of nutty edge to them, I guess. We're just looking at the ingredients here. So you've got semi whole wheat, cricket flour, sesame seeds, extra virgin olive oil, and that's pretty much it.
It's just a normal nice cracker. I mean, I just have that with cheese.
Absolutely.
I just buy those. Oh, they're nice. I mean, I wouldn't know there was cricket powder in there, would you?
There is something else interesting on here, though, and which we were talking about before we went on air, which is about the allergens. So looking on the packet, I can see the things that are bolded to say that they're an allergen. And one of the things here is that people who are allergic to crustaceans, shellfish, are also allergic to insects.
I guess that's because they've got a shell. Am I being overly simplistic?
Yeah, in terms of genetics, they're kind of close to these animals, let's say. So yeah, it's because of the shell, the elements within the shells, basically.
So if you're allergic to crustaceans, don't eat any insect products, I think, is a good idea. The other thing is if you do use crickets, I'm asking you here because I really don't know, Guy, does that mean that it's not vegetarian?
Yes, I mean, they're an animal, right? Although we had a really interesting experience. We did this this event with Eat Grub, and we had a few vegans there, and they were saying that they were more than happy to eat the crickets and the insects. And I'm not entirely sure.
How does that work then?
Yeah, I it was really, really interesting. It was quite a while ago, a couple of years back, so I can't remember the intimate details of the conversation. But yeah, it was really, really fascinating to hear that a vegan was more than willing to eat insects.
Well, what we'd really like on Twitter or through the website, if you could let us know if you're vegan or vegetarian, what your thoughts are on eating insects, particularly, you know, insect powder, which, you know, you can't taste actually, but it's part of the cooking process. It's upping your protein levels. We'd be really interested to know what vegans and vegetarians think about how this should be classified, I guess is what I'm saying.
Sorry, I just missed the end of that there, but yeah, it is.
How you would classify it, you know, what would you term cricket? Would it be, it's not an animal, is it vegetable? I don't know.
Well, in this case as well, because it doesn't look like the animal at all. I mean, it looks like a cracker, or it looks like, a fusilli pasta style. It's because you take the cricket and you dry them and then grind them into a powder. So,
yeah, exactly. Basically, you rear your crickets, then you freeze them, let's say, and then you grind them. So, and that's how we get the powder.
Well, quite an interesting ethical debate as well, I think, really. But a lot of people would say it's a very sustainable. I mean, the point of it is it's incredibly sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the difference between rearing insects for protein versus rearing beef for protein, I mean, some of the stats. Again, I don't have them in front of me, but the stats for the amount of greenhouse gases for rearing cattle is more than all of the planes, the cars, all of the transport in the entire world,
and the resources, and the water, and the you name it.
Yeah, yeah, so it's a big deal. And I think in pound for pound, insect protein, insects have more protein than beef. But of course, you're not going to eat a pound of insects because they don't weigh very much. So you have a huge mound of them.
So a very interesting new area. And if you're interested in Cricket's products, where would we go, Guillermo?
On our website, cricketfood.com. Otherwise, on Instagram, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter as well.
So that's cricketfood.com, and that is C-R-I-C-K-E. food.com. And definitely something to be watching. We're going to see more and more insects in our diet, aren't we?
Great. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And there you have it, another fascinating round of great guests at Food Matters Live. Eating wonderful ice cream, drinking skinny beer, and tasting insects. What more could you ask for? I hope you enjoyed the show, and I look forward to listening with you next week. Thanks.